we're going to be talking with a stress expert today, and her name is Denise Green. Her book is called Work-Life Brilliance, Tools to Break Stress and Create the Life and Health You Crave. You know, most everybody's addicted to something, wouldn't you agree, just looking around? And most all those things cause stress. Stress can show up in any number of symptoms. There's about 20-something symptoms that go along with having some kind of addiction. And one of the things that I see a lot is anxiety or nervousness, and secondarily, depression. But that's another story. Today we're going to talk about work stress. And our example of that is workaholism, and we'll get into that. But first let me tell you that Denise is a speaker, a writer, executive coach, and she's committed to helping people go from burned out to brilliant. She's had a successful corporate career, and she has a coaching corporation now whose purpose is to unleash human potential. And she's been doing this for more than a decade and has helped thousands of people feel less stressed and have more ease and fulfillment in all areas of their lives. So today we're going to talk about her book, Work-Life Brilliance, Tools to Break Stress and Create the Life and Health You Crave. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Wynn. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a little hot here, but other than that, I'm doing pretty good. When did you publish this book?
Let's see. I am not good with time, but this one I do remember. It was April of this year.
Okay, so it's a relatively new book. And is this your first book?
It is. I've done smaller books, e-books, and I didn't really work hard at publishing those. So in my mind, those were more vanity books because I don't think they helped many people. Yeah. And I decided that I needed to do it differently this time because my mission, you and I have talked about mission, my mission is to help as many people as I can tap into their potential. And that's what my company's title is all about, Brilliance, Inc. It's not about intelligence. It's about that spark in each of us. And, you know, I work one-on-one and I work in small groups, but a book is really the best way I've found. Podcasts are another way. But these, I needed to find a way to reach more people.
Well, help me out here. This week I'm publishing my 41st book, and I need some advice on marketing. You got a tip or two?
41st? I should be getting tips from you. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I can tell you what not to do.
Well, I'm really good at what not to do as well. So in the past, I've tried to do everything on my own. And for a couple of years, I tried to write a book on my own. And then I thought maybe about marketing it on my own. But by now I've learned my lesson. And in the book, one of the six steps I have in achieving any goal is to get support. And so that is what I have learned. I have learned that I thought I had to do it all. And there is no way we can do it all. We're not alone. There are people out there who want to help, who are ready to help. For me, it's very hard for me to ask for help. For whatever reason, I'm wired to think that that's intruding. And the lesson for me with this book has been people love to help, especially when they realize they're part of something bigger. So there are people out there who will help spread the word, and you're helping spread the word for me right now. So I'm not going to give you any other advice because I'm not an expert in marketing, that's for sure.
Well, this platform goes all over the world, podcast on iTunes, and it's archived, so as long as they stay in business, you and I will stay in business. And it's 24/7, so people can call in, can go to the Internet at 2 a.m. in the morning, and you're not locked into a radio station schedule. So I think that all authors ought to talk to their niche in a podcast, among other things. But let's get on to the topic today. My definition of addiction is if you have a behavior that is hurting you or hurting someone you love and you can't stop it for whatever reason, then you're addicted to that behavior. Could you go with that as a definition?
I can absolutely go with that. And I would say the only word I have any issue with is the word can't. And I would say it's more about haven't yet. And you need help. You need help to break it. And the reason I love the way you talk about addiction is that it normalizes it. And so whether it's technology or food or alcohol or a behavior, we're all walking around with these unintentional habits that are not serving us. And at some point, we call them addiction because they're serving us so poorly in the world. They're taking us so far off track, and we feel so stuck by them. But they're everywhere in our lives. And so my book is about finding the ones that you're ready. You're ready to take on, and that you have to take on in order to change the trajectory of your life.
Well, you're absolutely right. To the people that are listening today, what do you think is the most common addiction in the country today? Okay, you don't know? It's overeating. There's over 30% of our population that's addicted to too much food. And as you probably know, or if you don't know, you should know, carrying too much weight around on your frame day in, day out, will cause you to die faster and will cause you to have a life that's not as happy as if you were not carrying this weight around. Can you imagine if you had to have a big bag of, let's say, rice on your back that weighed 100 pounds and you had to carry it everywhere all day long, upstairs, downstairs, and everything? Well, there's a lot of people out there that are carrying more than 100 pounds around with them. So, just one idea there, but Denise is talking in her book about, among other things, stress related to the workplace environment. And I see a lot of people who are workaholics. What do you think about workaholism as a addiction, Denise?
I definitely think it's real. And I don't think everybody has it, but I do think that the people that would be considered workaholics, they're motivated by different things. For example, I may have 6 people in a group, and I'll do a personality assessment for each of them. Very unique motivations. One particular person might be motivated to work because they're not very in touch with their emotions, and they define themselves by goals, and they only define themselves by the next goal, so they really don't sit and savor what they've achieved. So they have this addictiveness to achievement. And I had one person who recently had not taken a day off in 7 years. And meanwhile, he has a wife and 2 kids. And he almost missed his son's graduation date because he didn't have it on the calendar and he had a business trip scheduled. So for him, it was a huge wake-up call. Say, who's driving me to do this? And it was only himself who was doing it. Whereas somebody else may be a workaholic because they're a people pleaser. And they can't say no. Again, I used my word can't, which, not that they can't, it's that they haven't become aware of the fact that their habit of saying yes to things that are not aligned with their greatest values and greatest purpose is creating stress, weight gain, resentment. So I have to ask my clients what's motivating it. I have to get to the bottom of that. And then we have to work at the underlying thoughts that are motivating the behavior.
Yes. Okay, well, I've had clients like what you're talking about, and they work all the time. They're rarely at home to see their kids. They don't go on vacations. They make a lot of money, or at least enough money. And then one day, they have a heart attack and die. Not much of a life, or it wouldn't be for me to be so into one thing that everything else in your life suffers from it.
Exactly. And what I'm trying to do is help people before they get to the breaking point. Too often, people don't get help like the situation you just described, or they get help so late that maybe they can't pull back their relationship. You know, maybe I've had people who come to me too late, and within weeks of us working together, their partner files for divorce, or their kid says, I don't want to talk to you anymore. So how do we change the direction we're going before we get to that point where, you know, maybe we, hopefully we don't die, but I did have a client who missed a call, and then he missed another call, and then he missed 3 months of calls, and he had had a heart attack. And when they took his blood, they couldn't even test his blood because it was like molasses. He didn't know that he had diabetes. So he didn't show the normal symptoms of stress, but he also wasn't taking time to take care of himself. He hadn't had a physical in years, and if he had just gone and done that, he would have known what was going on inside his body. But he wasn't aware, and he's lucky to be alive.
Well, I hate to come down on the healthcare system, but it is in a pitiful mess. There's no sense to not going to have a physical or go see your doctor, except if you need that money to put gas in your car and food on the table. And I had an employee last month who had a sinus infection, and he went to the emergency room. They looked at him for 5 minutes or so, gave him a prescription for some antibiotics, and between the hospital and the emergency room doctor, his bill was over $1,200, and he doesn't have any insurance. So when you talk about health, a lot of it is up to the person to do the right thing, but how can you do the right thing when you can't afford to do the right thing? You know what I mean? Let's talk about 4 achievable steps for turning burnout into brilliance, and define, in your terms, burnout and brilliance for our audience.
Okay. Well, there is a clinical definition for burnout, but really for me, it's all in the eye of the beholder. If you feel overwhelmed, if you feel low energy, if you feel... you feel like you're trapped, then you're suffering from burnout, which is just an extreme version of stress. Brilliance, it isn't a place we land on one day and we stay there forever, because we're constantly aging. We're constantly encountering different challenges. But it's becoming our best self moment by moment. So that means from 4 different angles. Our internal self, our thoughts, our emotions. Are they more positive than negative? We're always going to have negative thoughts and emotions. We can't stop that because it's how our brain is wired for survival. But how do we make the most of this amazing system we have in our heads? So that's one element. The other is our outward appearance, which you and I have talked about, our physical self. So not just internally, how well is our system working, but... how well is it functioning externally? And then our relationships, and both our relationships to people and our relationship to things, whether that thing is food or technology or anything else you can think of that is in our material surroundings. So I think we're living a brilliant life when all of those things are working optimally. And then when they stop working optimally, we are recognizing that and making shifts versus becoming victims to our circumstances. Because everybody's going to get sick. Everybody's going to lose people. Everybody's going to have traumas, emotional traumas, big and small. So this is about building resiliency and building this habit of awareness and being able to shift.
Let's go into the 4 points that you have, if you want to go into them in a little bit more detail.
Sure.
You say, one, tame your thoughts. What do you mean by that?
Well, every action in our lives, whether it's what we put into our mouths, what comes out of our mouth, what we say, it's preceded by a thought. So if you really want to change a habit, if you really want to break an addiction, really want to achieve a goal, you have to go back to the thought. Because if you don't, you may actually succeed at changing a behavior, but it will not stick because you haven't addressed the underlying thought. So we are wired, unfortunately, with 5 times as many neural processes for negative thinking as positive thinking. And those negative thoughts produce painful emotions. I often use traffic. It's the most common thing that we can all relate to. If you're driving in traffic, what is your habit of thought? If somebody cuts you off, where does your mind go? So for most of us, because of that negativity bias that we have, we're going to think, well, that guy's so rude. That guy's a jerk. How dare he cut me off? Any one of those possibilities. But it's just as possible that that person didn't see you and is really stressed out and has a migraine. That's possible. How do we know? We don't know. But I can tell you that the latter thought, that it was unintentional, he's probably embarrassed, he's probably really stressed about something, that makes me feel a lot better. And as a result of that, I'm not going to try and get revenge on him. I'm not going to honk my horn. I'm not going to have my own stress skyrocket with cortisol getting dumped into my system. I'm going to have a better day. I'm going to be a better driver, because not because of what he did, but because of the thought I had about that action. So that's what I mean by tame your thoughts.
Denise Green, Work-Life Brilliance. Denise, how do our listeners get a copy of your book?
So all they need to do is go to Amazon, and on Amazon.com you can get it print, audio, or Kindle.
Okay. Do you have a website set up that talks about your work?
I do. It's brillianceinc.com. That's I-N-C, brillianceinc.com. And on the resources tab of my website, whether you buy the book or not, you can get all the tools that are inside the book.
Great. Give me a quick book report. How's it set up? What method do you have taken people from the first page to the last page?
Oh, I've never actually been asked that, and so I have to go back and think about it.
You got chapter headings, right?
Yeah. No, it's the first is just an introduction, and I give a little bit of basics about the brain. Because I want people to understand that they're not crazy, they're not lazy. It's how we're wired. We have to overcome our wiring in order to live our best life. So I hope that normalizes things for people, and it's not meant to let you off the hook. It's meant to let you know what you're up against, and that I'm going to help you figure it out and trick your brain. So then I break it out into 2 parts. The first one is the what and why section of the book. It sets the foundation. So I just talked about a little bit about the what being your brain and how it's wired. And then the why, so to help people really understand what motivates them and what's worth working for and why do they need to change right now. And they'll get my life satisfaction assessment that takes at most 6 minutes to do. And I've never seen people come out of something with such clear insight about what's working and what's not working. And then it's not that you have to address everything that's not working. It's just this instrument, this little assessment, helps people get really clear on what can I set aside and work on later, and what do I really need to make a priority right now. And then the part 2 section of the book is the how section, where I teach people the exact steps they need to take and what pitfalls to avoid if they're going to change any part of their life. We all make the same mistakes when we're trying to change a goal. I'm sorry, change a habit or a behavior. And so I walk them through that, and hopefully they'll see, again, you know, it's not my fault that I made those mistakes. That's how I'm wired. But now I know what to do to counteract it.
Okay. So this is Work-Life Brilliance by Denise Green. And Denise, we're going to go back to the four achievable steps for turning burnout into brilliance out of your book. And the second step that you talk about is exude authentic confidence. And I assume that you put the word authentic in there with a special purpose.
I do, because this isn't about... So fake confidence is kind of like narcissism. It's coming from a place of fear, and so we cover up our weaknesses and act like there's nothing wrong and it's everybody else's fault. Authentic confidence, those people know what they're not good at. They admit it, and they know what they're good at, and they admit that too. And it's really refreshing to be around that, especially when you have leaders, a leader who can be vulnerable and say, hey, I made a mistake there, or I'm not good at detail, so I need people around me to be good at detail. That's what authentic confidence is to me. And, you know, one of the fastest ways to get it is to notice how are you standing. Research, Harvard research by Amy Cuddy has shown that depending on your posture, you will be emitting different chemicals throughout your system. So if you have a closed down posture, you're going to have feelings of depression, feelings of sadness, feelings of inferiority. If you take a bigger posture, you're going to have you'll lower your stress hormone of cortisol, and you'll increase your testosterone and have genuinely more confidence just by your posture. Same thing with you when you smile. When you smile, whether you're feeling like smiling or not, it actually produces feelings of more happiness and ease.
Yeah, so but women, if they have the right posture, you say, it'll increase their testosterone, is that right?
Yeah, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, but what if it causes facial hair?
It's not going to produce that much testosterone.
Okay.
Every woman has testosterone in her, as well as progesterone and pregnenolone and estrogen. So it is a confidence-inducing hormone, and if you're low in it, whether you're a woman or a man, you're going to need to boost it.
Okay, I just want to clear that up so nobody would think, hey, I don't want to look like a man.
Right.
Okay, the next step is nurture brilliant relationships.
Right. So, first of all, you need to take a look around you and see what are the habits of the people around you. Because social studies have shown that we mirror the people closest to us. So it's really hard, for example, if you're in a group that's overeating, to not overeat. So you're going to have to get really clear. How much do these people matter to me? And if I want to keep them, what coping skills do I want to bring? And what do I want to say to them about the shifts I want to make in my life? If they really love you and really care about you, they may follow along. They may take your new goal as motivation for them to change as well and come along with you, which would be great. If not, at a minimum, they're going to understand and support you. And if they don't, if they belittle you, which is very common because we don't like it when people around us elevate themselves and we don't want to elevate, so we may try and bring others down. Well, then you need to take a really good look at that and see, is this relationship of value to me? When I say, so that's assessing your relationships. When I say nurture your relationships, I mean, when you think about somebody, call them, reach out to them, write them a letter. I have a 2-page letter here to my grandma that I need to mail to her, but just little things like that. People aren't, you don't know how long you have with people, so let them know. Pay attention. And I'm not talking about Facebook love. I'm talking about real love where you send them a note, and I don't care if it's over email or what, but you let them know you're thinking about them, you give them a call, you leave them a voicemail, but you keep in touch and you tell them how much they matter to you.
Well, I think it's very important when you're talking about relationships, if you want to have a successful life, especially a business life that's successful, one of the greatest things that you can do is get a mentor that has already done what you want done and has been successful at it. And of course, you can spend a lot of money going online to take people's courses, or you can actually somehow or the other get them to mentor you one-on-one. But almost equally important is reading what they've had to say about their life. And I personally think that if a person wants to be a success, that it would be good if they would read a book a day. And I don't mean read it every word of that book, because I nor anybody else has the time to do that if they've got a life. But what I do is I find a book from somebody that I respect or has had significant achievements in a specific area that I want to have achievements in, get their book, probably the most recent one, but sometimes they've written books in the past that were really good, and read the back cover of the book to see what it's about, then open the book to the table of contents and go down that table of contents until you land on a chapter that speaks to you, and then read that chapter. Now, you may just read one chapter out of a book, and or you might get so engrossed in it that you read it all, but reading what people have written probably is one of the top ways that you can improve yourself consistently over a long period of time and have better work-life brilliance in the terms that you put that in.
I couldn't agree more. It reminds me of Jack Canfield's book, The Success Principles, where he has a chapter called Success Leaves Clues. So, right, there's somebody out there who's done what you do, and it's frightening to me how little people read, because there's so much out there that can help you no matter what your situation is.
I'm having a senior moment right now, but do you remember the name of Jack's co-editor in the series that they did?
The Chicken Soup?
Yeah.
Chicken Soup books? It was Mark somebody, but
Mark
I don't remember his last name right now.
Okay. So, Mark Victor Hansen, he has done seminars, written many books other than Chicken Soup for the Soul. He's a great speaker. And some years ago, he was promoting a mastermind group where he brought people together that they would sit down and discuss issues and talk about it around the table with people there giving their opinions, and then the people who wanted a mastermind on a particular subject would take all that information home with them and try to see what worked and what didn't work. And this is an interesting story because Mark had a mentor that was a billionaire, inventor, and I can't think of his name right now, but at any rate, the point is this. He asked him, he says, I've got this mastermind group that's not as successful as I want it to be, and I'm wondering if you can give me any advice, because all I have in my mastermind group is millionaires. And so his mentor told him, that's what the problem is, Mark. All I have in my mastermind group is billionaires. So, reach as high as you can. You don't want to try to get your advice from people who are not successful. Find the most successful person that you can get a hold of, and mainly these days it would be by reading their books, and let them mentor you and take their advice. Just something in passing that I thought would be interesting for our people that are stressed out because they've been working hard and things haven't been going right. Well, try this for 6 months and see what happens. So your final point is manage your relationship with technology. Wow, if that isn't something, I don't know what it is. Tell us about how you would manage technology.
Well, I know you said overeating is the biggest addiction, and I believe you. I would say technology is right behind it,
yes,
is my guess. And technology, our brains are not wired for it. The iPhone is, what, 11 years old now? And last year, the American Psychology Association did their every 10-year study, survey, and it was the highest increase in stress that they've done, that they'd seen since they started asking these questions. I don't think it was an accident that smartphones were 10 years old when they did this study. Our brains are scrambled, and food is a coping device, but so is technology, and it's unintentional, but we can stream anything, anytime. And so we, and the app designers who design all the pretty little things that go on our phones, they are designed to get us addicted. They know how to get a dopamine dump in our system just as if we were sitting at a slot machine. So if you want to take control of your life, you have to take over your technology. And I think maybe instead of sitting down at night to binge watch Netflix, open a book and do what you just said. Or instead of trying to surf the web while you go on a walk, get on a treadmill or go for a walk and listen to a podcast. I mean, use technology for its best usage, not to check out and tune out. I'm not saying you can't ever just enjoy yourself, but I mean, why people watch the news, for example, makes no sense to me. It is there not to inform you, but to upset you, so that you'll keep coming back and try and find the resolution to whatever stress you're feeling. Don't let that suck you in. Manage your emotions by managing what you look at, managing what you listen to.
Yes, I was thinking just the other day that one of the greatest challenges that parents have is in seeing what they can do to not let their children become addicted to all the devices that they have. You see children these days with a phone in their hand, and they're oblivious to the world around them. And if you say anything to them, they get extremely mad. And if you take their phone away from them as a punishment, it's even worse. But we have this addiction that you're talking about that it may or may not be more important than overeating, but certainly is something that parents need to get their heads around before their children can't have relationships, can't have conversations. They're just in the cloud, so to speak.
I agree. As a mother, I agree. My daughter's only 10, but this is something I really am watching for.
Well, just wait another couple years and you'll be in worse shape.
Luckily, right now, her favorite device is a Kindle, which doesn't have a blue light, so it's not messing up her melatonin, and it's just a simple backlight. So I love that she loves to read, and that's a great usage of technology.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so what major ideas, points, thoughts, or anything that you would like to put on this podcast, which is going to go all over the world to tell people about what you do, that I haven't asked you about yet?
You know, I would just leave people with this. I know they're already overwhelmed. They're already feeling probably guilt about where they are right now. I would say start small. Be gentle. Be kind to yourself. This life is hard. This world we live in is hard. We were not designed for this world. We're designed to be nomads on the savannah. Not sitting down, but walking for at least 8 hours a day. So we're living lives that are incongruous with our design. So of course it's going to hurt, and it's going to be hard. But there is hope out there, but the way to do it is not by setting some huge goal. The way to do it is by having a big vision for yourself that inspires you, and then starting really, really small. And it's going to be so small that you're going to feel kind of pathetic taking it. But, you know, if you're trying to exercise more, just buy a pair of good walking shoes today on Amazon. Just do something small. If you've already got the shoes, walk around the block. But don't beat yourself up if you don't take 10,000 steps today. Take 200 steps. Start small. Get in that rhythm, because success cues success. So once you have that momentum, you start to feel like you are in control, you're capable, versus that feeling that we hate that is so common, a feeling like a victim who's out of control, whether it's a victim of food, a victim of a boss, a victim of a spouse, or a child who's misbehaving. We need to get you in a place where you feel in control and that you have capacity to achieve what you set out to achieve.
Wonderful. Denise Green, Work Life Brilliance. You can get it at her website or at Amazon fairly easily. I would think that if this program that we had today and the things that we talked about resonated with you, that you would want to go right out and get this book, because it's very good on work life, stress, relationships, all kinds of things related to your work life. And Denise, thank you so much for being on the program and talking to us today. And I wish you the best of luck, and maybe you'll have another book project coming up in the future.
I might. I'm taking a little rest from this one, but I really appreciate you having me. It's been such a delight, and I'm just very grateful.
Well, I'm grateful for you taking the time to help our people all around the world who have issues to be able to get another point of view from another professional. So thank you very much, and have a wonderful evening.
Okay, you as well.